Welcome inside the coach's room. Every week, we talk to elite coaches and backroom staff about their experiences, how they develop, and how they develop their players.
We don't set limits because we know there are other things. There are other things you can use and do and adapt with. So creating the context is very important for the person to always challenge the limits. That's very important, because if you don't challenge your limits, nobody will.
In this episode, we talk to Bertrand Telleraas. And the co-host of this episode is Wouter van Brucken-Fock. Bertrand is the founder of Action Types. I have to warn you, this is one of the best episodes I've had so far, but at the same time, you have to be very, very, very sharp to follow it, because Bertrand is next level. His knowledge is next level. Everything he says is with meaning. So really, really pay attention to this discussion. So stop what you're doing and enjoy this episode with Bertrand Telleraas. Bertrand, welcome inside the coach's room.
Thank you.
And Wouter next to me in the studio. Big welcome to you.
Thank you.
Your second time.
My second time, yes.
Well, and Bertrand said he was already in several podcasts, but they were French, so you're not a newbie either.
Yeah, most of them were French, yeah.
Most of them, some of them English. Okay, and Bertrand, you're in your house, in the living room, or somewhere in the house. Yeah. You didn't say living room, you said somewhere.
But somewhere.
Okay, what time is it this for you? Is it a busy period or is it a normal schedule? How's life at this point?
Yeah, it's quite a busy period now. After the COVID, a lot of people wanted everything to be on time. So that was a rush, like kind of the rush.
Okay, and what does it mean? Everything on time? Does it mean?
Yeah, like because most of the things were slowed down during the COVID period, and now people are getting up to their pace, okay, their rhythm. So they want things to be on time, and all of them wants that to happen.
Okay.
So, it's like stacked.
Does that work for you if people push?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I have two arms, 2 feet, and things will be done, but at my own rhythm.
Yeah, I understand. I think I am much alike. How are you about it with pressure?
Yeah, the same.
Okay. So you can push us, but we don't really move then.
Yeah, of course.
Don't stick to your own rhythm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's push you to one question, Bertrand, and then we won't push you to any other questions. Well, we will talk, of course, but in your office or in a coach's room, maybe you have a coach's room, coach's room as a volleyball coach. What was the most important? What is the most important?
I can summarize that with a small sentence. Being distinct and not distant, which means be yourself, assume yourself, and that will make other people connect with you easily.
Okay, interesting. Why is this well?
I heard in a lot of different podcasts that you were having, knowing yourself is a must, and as soon as you know yourself a little bit better, then of course you can assume your distinctiveness. You can be different. You can be accepted like you are. So assume who you are, and then connect with the others.
Okay. When was the first time that you really started to recognize yourself?
Oh, it was like something when I was 25. Years old. I was already a national coach in Switzerland for the youth team.
Volleyball. I was talking about volleyball.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I was also doing a PE education, so physical education teacher. After biology, I started to study biology first, then I did physical education. So I was during all the time I was coaching volleyball, and things started at that time. I started to understand that thing. So you have to know yourself, because you are owning, in brackets, of course, you are owning yourself, and nobody will do it better than you.
Okay. What did you discover when you were 25 about yourself?
In fact, I was all my youth and teenagers, I was like, I should be an introvert or something like that. Because I was a lot of time inside my head and trying to understand a lot of things. And it's why also I chose to study biology first. But after, I discovered that I was not.
Okay.
In fact, I was more an extroverted person, which is I need more activation in order to be efficient. It starts in the morning. Morning starts very slowly, and then I'm getting better. And in the night, I'm perfect.
Okay, so you discovered, I don't know if it's a moment, but you discovered I need my surrounded or the context where I'm in is going to bring me to life, or it's going to bring me to sleep almost.
Yeah, it's a bit like that, yeah. And of course, it's always more complicated as it seems.
Sure.
Because you have different parameters that are influencing the way you live your life. But I knew that I had to jump between two extremes, which is isolated on one hand to understand things, and then connected with the others in order to share and develop myself.
Okay. Walter, what are you? Introvert or extrovert?
Introvert, yeah.
Okay. When did you realize this? Or you mean introvert in the way that action typing is describing it? Or
yeah,
I think it's
not the same as people think about it.
Yeah.
An introverted person is just somebody that wants to be more efficient and economical in terms of how they use their energy. So they spare it for prime time.
And that's what action typing says, or that's what society says?
No, that's what action type says. So what Carl Gustav Jung was saying about energy and introverts, their attention is inwardly oriented first. Because they want to reflect things first and then decide where I want to spend my energy and where I doesn't want to spend my energy.
Because I think, well, I don't know all the details, but I think that's a very interesting distinction as well, because a lot of people think with introverts are just people that are quiet.
That's not true.
That's
they can be very loud.
Say, yeah.
They can be very loud. If you think about Michael Jordan on a court, he can be very loud when he was playing basketball, and he's introverted. But it's just in surrounding where he knows he's very economical and efficient when he's using his energy, so he can play with the parameters much, much better than outside of the court.
Okay. Sorry. Back to you, Walter.
No.
You were saying introvert.
Yeah.
How did you discover this, and related to action typing? Because then we're gonna go into action typing or straight away, actually.
Well, actually, I was studying mental coaching. I was haptonomy. Holland.
Maybe haptonomics or something.
Haptonomics,
I don't know.
Haptonomy. And then a guy in my course, he was following the action types course. So we were sitting during lunch and he told me about it, and I immediately was interested. So then after the study, I went to Peter Murphy to follow the action type course here in Holland. And when I finished that, my hunger was still not satisfied. So then I went to Swiss, to Bertrand, to follow the action types course over there. And during that period, I got to know myself more and more, and what all the letters and all the things mean and mean for me.
Yeah.
So it's a process that's been going on for about 10, 12 years now. And I'm still learning every day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I remember when he came the first time in Switzerland, he thought he was more extroverted than introverted, but then we changed it with his consent, of course.
Okay. Well, and what was the change of thoughts there? Why did it change? Or did you thought he was extrovert, Bertrand? Or did
no? He said to me what he was doing in Holland was more like on the extroverted side, a profile we call D3. And then when I was watching him moving and doing his things during the courses, I said, there is some things that are not aligned with a D3 there. So we profiled him again, and then we came up with a D2, which is an introverted version of the same motor skill.
Okay. What was the benefits, Wouter, that you, superficial, that you switched boxes because you went from D2 to D3, so somebody thought or you thought
no,
you were more...
No, the contrary.
Oh, sorry.
From D3 to D2. Okay,
sorry.
Yeah. Oh, it's pretty simple. Now I know that when I've spent too much attention on the outside, I need time for myself to reload the battery again. So I go back to my introvert function and dive in that world and then reload again.
Okay.
So that's really simple. Yeah. Now I know why sometimes being in the extrovert world is too much for me.
Okay. Okay. To give a really my conclusion of this first 10 minutes, because I know Wouter a little bit and I know you meditate, and that's something you do maybe because of this.
Yeah.
Okay. And Bertrand put you in a box.
No, I didn't.
Oh, no, I know. I'm not sure. But
it's just for the people hearing this, because it's not our purpose.
Oh, no, I know. But it's more the first thing I noticed now already is that, okay, because you type yourself, you give it helps you thinking about, okay, this benefits me or this is probably something that helps me.
Maybe, we really have labels just to accelerate the talking.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Because you can understand it. We can understand each other faster if we use labels and words. That's the way our brain is working. But at the end, you cannot really,
you create symbols,
put anybody in a box except when they die, maybe.
Okay. I think I understand, but maybe for the people that are listening, can you give some highlights of what it is or what it typifies somebody, or it gives somebody a label, like you said. But what is action type and what does it do?
So action types is like a action profile. So it's how do you use your body to organize your movement in space and time? So there is preferences and just a way to talk about the preferences that you are having. Okay, we can do almost everything, and at the same time we have a dynamic way to use those different things, and that's your profile. Okay, everybody can do almost everything, and at the same time it has to be launched, initiated by one of the possibilities, and then that one, the entry point, is used to label the person, but it's just an entry point from which you can develop a lot of different ways of doing. We did very recently an analysis of the Glasgow kick from Zidane in the Equipe, so the French journal. We had 2 pages in a special edition where we are talking about Zidane because of his 50th birthday. And we analyzed the way he was kicking the ball according to his profile, because I had the chance to profile him directly in December 21 when I was in Madrid. And we could talk about how he actually organized his body. And he was not using his first, what we call his principal motor skill, but he was using one of what we call the backup systems, the motor backup, because the situation, the context was pushing him to do so. He was in a very special situation with a high ball and on the left foot, and he's a right-footed guy. So very different things. And at the same time, he could use another way of kicking. And he said himself that he tried after to reproduce the same kick, but he never could, because that was the outcome of the moment, an emergence situation.
Okay, interesting. And how does this then relate to a specific action type or action typing in general?
It just shows that despite the fact that you have a way of doing that is more prone to imprint your life, which is I'm using more of that, maybe 60-70% of the time I'm using that way of kicking the ball. It also doesn't define completely me, because I can use also other ways, very efficient ways also to play a ball. Okay, if I am confident, if I just trust myself in terms of adaptation on the court, I can produce another gesture that is as efficient as my main one, let's say. So it doesn't put people really in a box.
I understand. But if you have a specific type, maybe you are more, I'm doing an assumption here or my idea. So if you're more outwards, so you're looking more at the circumstances that you're in instead of looking at your own body, you are a person that gathers the information from around you to kick or to move in a certain way. And if you're more introvert, you're looking more at your own, how does my body feel, or what do I feel when where I put my foot on the ground, or where is the opponent, where does he touch me literally?
Mm-hmm.
That mainly affects the way that I move. Is that the distinction?
Yeah. In fact, Zidane is an introvert. He has the same motor profile than Wouter. And in fact, at that moment, he had to extrovert himself. So, because the situation was very special. The excitation was very high. It was the end of the game. And one chance is coming. He's taking information. When we see the video, he's taking information all around him before doing anything. So he knows approximately where people are and so on and so forth. And the ball is very high. So it seems that he has plenty of time. And he's not the guy that likes high balls. So at the same time, he had a high ball, like almost a sky ball that we call it in volleyball. And of course, he was taking information very actively around. So he had to extrovert him, which is hyperactivate himself in terms of all the information that was available at that moment in order to realize his gesture. And he could really completely adapt to that special moment with success. And I mean, as I said, he never really could reproduce it. So he doesn't know how to do it. And that the idea with archetype is we know how to put that guy in that competence. We know what he needs to do if he wants to do it again. But at the end, I just met him, so we may start something in the future, but I don't know.
Okay, I understand. So you have a natural way of reacting, which he did with that kick.
He has a natural way, which is right foot.
Ah, okay. Sorry. Yeah. It was the opposite.
And that was another way of acting, because it was a direct kick with no control, a high ball, a lot of things that he doesn't like. Yeah, in fact, so that was quite interesting, and he kicked really with a style that is completely different than what he's used to do.
Interesting. What do you hear if you hear this, Wouter? You hear this story about Zidane and okay, he's counteracting on his profile, but apparently he reached out of, you could almost say he reached out of himself. What does it do with you if you? Because I'm thinking, okay, I'm a coach. We're hearing this first 15 minutes of action typing. What am I hearing?
Good question. What I hear is that, what I mostly hear is that we can do all. So, but we have a preference for some moves, but we can do all. And in exceptional circumstances, we can do things that are hard to reproduce for us. But the toolbox is full of different tools. We can use a lot of them, but most of the times we use a couple of them.
Normally we are always in that 70% zone.
Yeah,
that we know what
and
to
sometimes
do.
Sometimes we accelerate and we do something that's exceptional for us, but we can do it all if we are in the right circumstances. And I think if that's one thing for me as a coach, that you have to create context for players so they can thrive within their own potential.
Could be that the take-home message at that point is with action types, we don't put limits. Okay, we try to know exactly what Wouter said. We try to know where the guy can thrive and push his own limits. So we try to free the expressions by gaining confidence and so on and so forth. So that's the idea. So no limits in terms of that. So the person is the only person to set the limits. So if he knows, he can push them. So let's push them so he can discover more scope for his own expression.
Okay. Maybe I'm trying to categorize here, but that pushing, is that the pushing that you know that you're not limited to your own 70%, like you said in
exactly.
the
Didan? Yep. Yeah. We don't set limits because we know there are other things. There are other things you can use and do and adapt with. So that's not our idea, but making the guy conscious, creating the context, as Wouter said, creating the context is very important for the person to always challenge the limits. That's very important, because if you don't challenge your limits, nobody will for you.
I understand. Okay, if I'm not thinking about myself, maybe as a player or the players that I work with, and I combine it with this story, or with the story, with this, with action typing, I can't imagine that it is very important that you know that where somebody's 70% is, so where somebody's preference, what is his, let's say, his natural way of moving. Because otherwise you're just hoping that he will connect with the things that you are offering him or the things that you will be saying to him. So how important is it to know the preference of a player?
The paradox is that 70% is not the preference. The preference okay. is the dynamic between all possibilities. So how they give the lead to each other. That's your preference. So the 70% or maybe 60-50% at some moments, that's your entry point. Okay, that's where you enter. But most of the time, when you go to money time, which is the moment where you may have fatigue, you may be emotionally already affected, or you may have some injuries already starting. Okay, or you may also have some stress because of the ball that you have in your feet, and you know that ball is very important. So the paradox is that at that time, it's very difficult to use the entry point. Because the system is under high adaptation, high demand, and your body will adapt by using another way of playing. So that's the paradox. It's why we see a lot of football players kicking the ball out of the goal, despite the fact that they are 3 meters, 4 meters away. They know how to put the ball in, but at those moments, they lose completely the time and space parameters. So they cannot integrate information anymore, and they do whatever they can. And most of the time, it's not adapted. So the ball goes on the goalkeeper or on the pole or outside. So there is a switch under pressure. So the idea is really to create context where they learn how to play. Okay, of course, on the 50, 60, 70%, but they learn also to welcome the fact that under pressure, it may be something else. And it's not a problem, it's a solution. Most of the time, people see that as a problem because they lose their references. So the main references that they were training all the time. And at that point, they cannot use it because they are actually affected by the pressure of the game. So the adaptation of the body is, okay, do something else so that you can still adapt to the situation. So that's the big paradox that we are having. So under pressure, we don't perform the same. And that's why people have to learn, just to learn how to use both of them.
How can they learn to accept that?
How can they learn? Yeah. By experiencing.
Yeah.
Just by experiencing, which means we can show them that by doing differently, they are still very good. So that's a matter of, doing and succeeding. Of course, when you use 50, 60, 70% of your time, something, you become used to that thing. And it seems that it's like a comfort zone. Okay. You're building some kind of comfort zone. And at the same time, that's a danger because you feel home. And when your body's telling you something different, you feel that you're no more home. So you may be cautious or you may be not trusting what is happening. Okay, so which means there is a dilemma to solve between the context and the demand and the way you adapt. And that's something that you can learn very young in your age. There is many ways you can do this. You can switch from entry point by playing with your radar sights, so the peripheral preference that we discovered, what we call the motor eye or the radar sight. We can play with that parameter. We can change that one so that you use your second system instead of the first. So you get used to that system. You trust it, and you can play as naturally as on the first one. There is no problem. That's a matter of just welcoming the fact that it's a little bit different. That's it.
If you never push a player out of his comfort zone, the 60-70% becomes the 100%, and they don't know what to do.
They could see it that way and feel that everything that is there is okay, and everything that is out of that is not okay, which is in fact not the case.
Coaches, sorry for the interruption. Besides the coaches room, I run another company called Football Tours. This is a full service touring company, and we organize pre-season and winter training camps for professional football teams. We do this for both senior and youth teams, and we take care of everything. Hotel, training accommodation, friendly matches, whatever you need. We give youth teams the opportunity to train at the best youth academies of the Netherlands. Academies like PSV, Feyenoord, AZ Alkmaar and the KNVB, you can train there with your team. So, if you are a professional coach, you need to organize your training camp, or if you have a youth team and you want to train at the best facilities in the best academies of the Netherlands, go to footballtours.com. And now pay attention, tours is with a Z. So, footballtours.com. Now I'm thinking maybe very practical, or maybe a little bit too general, but is it always okay? You put a fullback, you put him on midfield, so his context changes. Is that already an example of changing it, or should we think smaller?
No. That it can be very small. I mean, you cannot tell before what it will be because of the fact that you don't know how the person will adapt or not adapt. Okay, so the switch between one system and the other one is completely individual. A situation may switch me and my colleague on the side, nothing. You see, so the same situation. So there is no way except experiencing that allows us to understand how people welcome the fact that it's a little bit different. Okay, so if you, in your case, the person can change position and of course be stressed by the change or just accept the challenge. If that person accepts the challenge, there is no reason to be stressed. But if there is some doubt in the system, of course, then you will see the result of the stress.
Okay, so it's in this example, or I don't know if it's in general, it is a mental or a psychological factor that changes the situation. Because maybe I was thinking more about. Literally the execution, you have to do different runs or you have to do different movements in a different position. But you said, no, it's the mental part that changes whether it becomes stressful or not, or whether it's too hard or not.
Yeah, in fact, it seems that it is the mental part, but it is just what we call the coherency. The person is creating the problem by putting some doubts inside the system.
Sure.
So projecting that I may do not as well as normally, okay? So that's a lack of trust or self-trust that is resulting from that. But the body, on the other hand, the body tries to create the condition where the person can perform. So what the person has to do at that moment is one of our famous sentence in Action Types is, listen to your body, not anybody, which means listen to how you are adapting to that situation, what the stress that you created is causing in your body posture, what are the changes. You may recognize that if you already experienced it in training, and that's what we want. you recognize that, okay, my body is trying to do something else and I can do with it and also succeed with it. So that's a challenge. So just listen to your body. The situation, you may never know how to react, but your body will tell you what to do.
And is it the same? Because I'm trying to fit it in myself. Is it the almost the discomfort that you feel that you have to push through? Is that what you're saying, or is it, did you notice something is different?
You if you are aware of the fact that it will change, you may accept it. If you are like submitted completely, like passively submitted to what is happening, then of course it's very, very difficult to welcome the move or the change of posture. So you need to be more conscious about what is going on. Your body is saying, okay, you're not ready for what is happening. I give you another chance. Okay. And if you are ready to take the chance, then you will do it. But if you are cautious and afraid of and so on and so forth, then of course you will not accept the challenge. And of course, we know in that case that you will have no timing. So you will have big problems at that moment.
Okay, interesting. What do you think so far?
Very interesting. Again, this every time I hear Bertrand talking about things like this, I learn a lot. So,
okay, what have you picked up so far?
What happens about accepting the challenge? I recognize if you accept the challenge, then you still have the timing and then you still have the coordination to solve the problems, to solve the challenges that come to you. But if you don't accept the challenge and you create
resistance,
stress inside yourself, then the first thing that goes is your timing and your coordination, and then really good soccer players in for example, they do things that you say, how is it possible that somebody with so much skill does something like that? But this is what happens.
Yeah. So the my conclusion then from you and from both of you now so far is that the shift that takes place, again, maybe I'm being very superficial again, from the 60 to the 30% or the 60 to the 40%, there's a shift, and there, in that moment, if you are open to it, it will be okay. It's not easy, but be more fluent. Once you realize, okay, this is going to be hard, and there's more resistance, or you almost block. If you block it, it doesn't work at all, of course. But if there's resistance, almost in your thinking patterns or your anxiety, or whatever the stress, that's what creates stress, or that is stress. The whole motor skill becomes much more difficult.
Then you're not ready to adapt anymore.
Yeah, so you can't.
You can say it's not difficult, and at the same time, it's not. You can say it's difficult because you feel it could be difficult, and at the same time, it's not difficult. Because if you stay open to the situation, if you still perceive what is coming on, your body will do the job. Okay, perception action is a cycle that is ongoing, okay? And the idea is to let that cycle do the job and not interfere in the perception action cycle. The danger is that we want to control and try to grasp the handle of what is happening, and we are not able to do it because the things are organized to be naturally fluid without me, without my consciousness. So I don't have to interfere in what is happening. I just have to let it go and trust, let it flow, and that's the idea. It's exactly what happened with Zidane at that moment. There was no when I talked to him. There was no idea of control. There was an intention. Let's play that ball. There, because he felt that there was some spot there, and he did it. Just intention, action. That's it. So, but of course, if you analyze it very in details, it's a lot of parameters that are moving at the same time. But in fact, for him, it was a natural outcome of the situation.
Yeah. Okay, so the if you're talking about yourself, or one person is talking about himself, he is going through the process himself, the way we described it so far. But now you take one step back and you are the coach and you are looking at players who are going through the process, which you don't know, you don't feel. Yeah, well, you can know because maybe you did the action typing, so you maybe have some knowledge, but you don't feel, you can only see it, I think. Well, that's my assumption again. How as coaches should we use this? Or how can we as coaches use this?
I think coaching is moving in that direction. When I was listening to some of the podcasts that you already published, I was listening to the coach because that was my job, still my job, coaching the coaches, educating the coaches. And when I was listening to what they experienced and what they were saying in their different position, they are going in that direction. They trust. As a coach, you just trust the player. But you just... I mean, just trust is a very big way of explaining it. Trusting is 100% or zero. There is no in between. Okay, so I trust or I don't trust. You cannot have a intermediate states in that domain, which means I send a message to the guy playing, to the player. You have my trust. So on my side, there is no doubt that you are going to do it. Okay, and that's the first message the guy in education, the young guys in academies have to understand. So they are ambassadors of the football on the court. And the guy that nominated them as ambassadors are the coaches. So you nominate only ambassadors that you trust. Or you don't put them on the pitch and you think they are not ready for the moment. Okay. That's also possible, but in education of young people, when the person is not highly skilled in development, when I put you there, I trust you. Point. Okay, there's no overthink. So that guy should really feel that with the blood. I mean, deeply in the body, I need to feel the trust of the coach, and not the fact that every time I move something not perfect, then he's making some kind of a gesture to excuse me. Okay, so that's a non-verbal thing that I hate when I am by looking at coaches on the court, when they just they do movement like a theatrical movement because the guy didn't do exactly what he wanted. Okay, I said no, that's not the way you send messages to the person that tried to do this. Okay, and that's something coaches have to understand. That's their problem. They should not send their problem on the shoulder of the person. Okay, that's a very point. So it's why I say when I was a responsible coaching education in Switzerland, I was saying actually an athlete that succeeds does it despite the coaches. You may have the best possible intention. Yeah. You may have the best possible intentions as a coach, but you still are limited by your human abilities and your emotions and everything. And what we want for the coach is that that they let the athlete succeed with the coaches. So you need to be with the person and not somewhere else. So if I exaggerate a little bit at that level, I mean, for me at all level, it's a little bit my philosophy of coaching. I cannot coach somebody I don't love. I need to love that guy. I mean, which means unconditionally put the trust in his hands. And I don't care about the mistakes, of course. I just want him to feel that I think he can. Okay. And that there I will see the difference. I will see the evolution. Because when I'm looking athletes on a court, I'm looking at where and when they are good. That's something that interests me. The rest, I don't care. When they are not good, I don't care. Because I want really to put them in a situation where they are constructing something for the future. They're not putting their energy on something that is destroying their confidence or their skills at a special moment. I want them to look forward. So it's something I heard a lot of on in the mouth of different people you were also interviewing. Okay, and I think it's a very, very important thing to understand if you want really to educate players and not machine guns.
Okay, very clear, recognizable.
Well, this is obviously the most important thing in coaching, and my mantra. You see teams who have the faith, the trust of the coach, they move differently than teams who that have a coach who's trying to control them. So I always say, a team with the trust of the coach, they move like a flock of birds. They're in sync. They have timing. They have rhythm. And if they don't have the trust from the coach and they do everything, how they think the coach wants them to play, then it's. Yeah, they move differently. It's more. How do you say? Yeah, controlled, less creative, less rhythm, less timing. Yeah, so giving the players the trust is the most important thing a coach has to do.
If I hear it, and I try to connect it to, let's say, the theory or the method so far. If you are really demanding and players become afraid to make mistakes, there's a big higher chance that they will experience stress.
So, of course, yeah.
They will be more pushed into their regions of their abilities that they are not able to do. Well, I don't know if I'm describing it right, but...
Yeah, you are. It's a bit, as I said, there are some people that will be very influenced by that, and some of us that don't care about what the coach is saying. And they will go through that despite of the coach. But people that are on the development level where their confidence is not as stable, of course, there will be direct consequences.
Yeah. And the thing is, what you're saying about love, I think every coach can recognize is if you work with a team, they become your boys or they become your girls. Literally, they are almost like your children or your players or whatever. You fight for them, they fight for you. I think there's almost a connection there.
There's a connection, and there is my sentence from the beginning, distinct and not distant, which means they are not my players. I can see them, of course, as my children and so on and so forth. But
sure.
I need also to make sure that they are the guys I'm coaching, the guys I love, okay? And at the same time, they are not mine. So the language is sometimes a bit difficult here. If I'm distinct, I need to be in my role as a coach.
I understand. Yeah.
I'm not a parent, so I'm a coach, and they have to feel that I am a coach and not a parent at the same time. So the distinctivity or distinctiveness is there. Okay, I want them to know what I'm doing, where I am, and the same for me. And it's why I can reduce the distance with them. Because I assume my position and my role and my responsibilities, okay? And I can get very close to them and create the trust and confidence because of that. And not mixing affectively my position with their life. I still need to be empathetic, of course.
Still feels a little bit like parenting to me because sometimes I need to get back to the role.
Of course. But with my children, I mean they're old enough now. But with my children, it's always like that. Also.
Yeah, I agree. No, I agree.
That's what helped me a lot with knowing the players' preferences. Because now I know why with some players I connect more easily than others, and it's not that I care about one player more or than another player, but yeah, it's just about connecting easier with one player than another. And some players are more out of my profile, for example. So I have to, do more, put more energy in the relationship and to get to know the player and what's driving him to connect.
Yeah. Okay.
And at the same time, it's where we have a potential. The players that we are connecting less with, it's where we have a potential to develop.
And can you explain?
Yeah, Wouter is saying that, of course, there's some people we are very prone to connect with. They are very close to our functioning.
There's a natural connection.
Yeah. There's natural connection, okay? But at the same time, they will not make me better. Because it's easy. I don't have a real challenge with them. I can push them, of course. I can work with them. I can do a lot of things. But the other people where the connection is not so easy, they are challenging me to move forward and develop myself to another level. So it's where I can really develop myself by welcoming the fact that they are different and I may not be as ready to work with them. And when I will be, I will move to my next level, which means
I think I will improve. Sorry for interrupting, but it got straight to me. I think as coaches, we all like those type of players. We like those that we cannot really get any grip on them.
They are real challenge.
We know that they are special because
they are sending something back to us that is pushing us forward. So a real challenge for me, and just asking myself, why am I not connecting as easily with them as with the others? And then I can get back to my life and see the problems that I had with such people, for example. And it's bringing gift. It's a new gift on the table, and I have to open the parcel, and I don't know what's inside, but that's a new gift. And it's something that makes me better.
It's beautiful how you say that. And I think that's especially when you're coaching youth, then it's the coach who has to adapt to the child and not the other way around.
Exactly.
Well, we think now, but 20 years ago, we said something different.
Yeah, but
of course, yeah.
we have to adjust and not a child.
So. I'm very curious, but this is completely out of the discussion, what we'll say in 20 years.
In 20 years, it will be different anyway. That for sure.
For sure.
The role of coach may move to another level, which means we will be maybe in a different position. We can have some vision for that, of course, 20 years. I think there will be moments where the coach will be very important, and there will be maybe moments where the coach will not interfere and not being allowed to interfere. We could go like other sports where coaching is not permitted at some point.
Ah, yeah, I understand.
I think working with game principles is already really good, because we are more and more talking about intentions, and just creating context and an intention, and we let the system organize, find a solution themselves. So
yeah, I agree on that for sure. But I'm also hearing what Bertrand is saying, that okay, maybe 20 years ago when we were players, it was top down. The coach was the boss. Yeah. You run 5 laps. Okay. And then you run 5 laps. If you cut a corner, you do 6, whatever. Mm. Now it is more, we give the players the context and they learn within the context, or we give them the tools and we let them figure it out. We give them a principles, but they can sort it out themselves. It's a dynamic, it may be in society, I think. Children are much more smarter and they are not used to authority anymore, like maybe post-war or whatever. And in 20 years, if you're going down or up or whatever, if you're going on that path, you can say, okay, you can only coach halftime before the match. And during the match, you sit in the stands. That's kind of what I'm hearing. And then you leave it completely up to the players. And there's a robot that's a referee. No, but that's something different. But That's what it could be.
Could be.
That's something we're going to work towards, right?
Yeah, but it's interesting. Yeah.
And maybe it will depend on the level of development of the players and the age and things like that. But anyway, a lot of coaching are out of their coaching line when they are exaggerating, for me, as I explained at the beginning. So the figure as a coach should be a reference, of course, a reference person that is here to help me move forward, which means helping me look forward to what I can do and what I achieve very well. And that's so program myself. It will help me to program myself, looking at what I can do now. Okay, and coming back to that, those limits we were talking about before, it will help me push my limits forward, and not taking my energy backwards, because I cannot change things there. I can change my intention forward, and I can push my limits and develop new skills, of course. And that's where the coaches have to deal with. They have to deal that kind of context.
I completely agree. Okay, going back to
and I don't say it's easy, of course.
Well, no, for sure.
Because very very easy to say, but difficult to do, of course. But if you know your mission as a coach, then it's, you know where to put your energy. So if you know where to put your energy, you know also where you shouldn't put your energy.
Okay, agree. Yeah. Okay, going back to the practical side again. You said before we went to robots, you said that now I know my players, so I know which one I can relate better with or how to deal with them. How does this work? Because action typing, you go in, you sit in a room all together, you give them a form and they fill out the form and you get a code. That's what I say in 5 sentences, but how does this work and how does this come to life as for you as a coach? Maybe you can start and Bertrand can add.
That's the one thing. Action types, that it's the body that gives the answers. So it's not a questionnaire. The questionnaire is a part of the profiling, but okay. the physical test, that's the most important thing in the profiling, because filling in a form consciously, you sit there, you think, okay, maybe I fill in this because the coach wants me to be like that, and so that's not 100% honest, I think. And I think the Dutch famous haptonome Tetro said, the body can't lie.
Okay.
So the answers are in the body. So I think the physical profiling is one.
Can you did it with your teams before?
Yes.
Okay. Take us through how does this process go? So you're a coach. You said you're listening to this podcast. I fucking want action typing right now. Okay. How do I do this?
Well, then you go to Bertrand, you follow a course, you learn how to profile players. And it's about 10-15 minutes. And you put the player in different dynamic positions, dynamic balance positions. And sometimes they're on and sometimes they switch off.
And dynamic positions, okay, I don't know if we can go too much. You literally put them on 1 foot, or you literally put them on two hands, whatever. But you,
I think the easiest way is walking bottom or walking top. Either they're more in a sitting position, so they walk like more in a sitting position, or they walk on top. They're more upright and they're more walk more on the front part of their feet. And so every person has a preference one of those, and you can test that really easily.
Okay.
And then you do it, and of course you have to repeat that because you have to find patterns in the testing.
Okay, so that's an example of the way somebody walks in a certain situation gives you a label. Let's call it like said earlier, and then one label. And then it's how you find different labels, how somebody is or how somebody's profile is.
And if we go on with the example of Wouter was giving right now is. If you're walking top or bottom, which is that you are walking bottom person is a pusher, which is they use more concentric energy by pushing with the rear foot and accelerating very linearly, and then changing angle and then another line, changing angle, another line. While walking from top, people are more rebounders. They rebound. So they don't like to stop. They don't like start and stop, for example. Because it's not very economical for rebounders to stop, because they have to start all over again. So when you have walking top people, first you can see with your children on the court who are the guys that wants to just always move without stopping, And then you already have a good cue about who's going to be that way. And those people, very strangely, they have what we call a high peripheral vision, which means everything that's on top of your eyes, on top of your head, is where they start to pick up information. Their attention is more upward first and then not on the ground. So they like to have a chin down, for example. If you look at Messi or Ronaldo, Cristiano, they have a lot of time the chin down, like if they were looking on top of the glasses, if they were wearing glasses. And they want to feel that upper part of the visual field together, closer to the ground, closer to their colleagues and partners and opponents. And it's why they have a tendency to put the head down. And a lot of coaches, especially in the old school, are always trying to say, head up. Okay. And of course, if you put those guys with head up, they are blind. So try to use and play football as a blind person, but it's not as easy. It's another category of play, not the same Olympics.
They literally prefer to have the eyes
down
on top of their eye sockets because that's where they get the most information.
They put chin down because the higher field of vision has to get down to the ground, which means they want to have their starting system, their initiating system up there as close to the ball as possible. And then they can feel the ball and the context at the same time. So that the idea and the intention at the end is I have to have a position, a posture where I can feel my technique, my ball handling, and the context with the same posture. Okay, without changing. Without having to move my head and change my body. Because if I link both the action and perception system, I can be ready for anything that happens. I can adapt right away with very high pace and very good timing. If I have a position that doesn't allow me to connect my ball handling with the context, then I am always late. So that's a problem. So for walking bottom people, so the pushers, it's easier because they're starting with a lower field of vision. And lower field of vision, of course, is close to the ball already. So they don't have to put their chin down. They can have a slightly chin up, and at the same time, they feel the ball and they feel the context very well. So, but they will have sometimes problem with high balls, of course, because then we can reverse the problem. So there is always advantages and disadvantages. There's no one way that is better than the other. So that's recognizing where people are good is so already, if I don't know anything about action types, looking at where people are more fluid, more spontaneous. And if they have the position where I have the chin down most of the time, then I can assume they are more rebounders than pushers. For example, of course.
Well, there's more. Great example. Coaches, I hope you're enjoying this episode so far. You can help us with reaching more listeners. Subscribe to the podcast or rate us in your favorite podcast player. But if you really want to help us, then share a post or story on your social media, on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook. If you share a post about us on social media and you tag us, I will personally make sure that you will get access to our best rated masterclass on our website. So subscribe, rate us, or share a post, and make sure you tag the coach. I think a lot of coaches that are driving now are thinking, okay, I should really look different to my players.
Yeah.
Well, I think I did. I'm doing it next time for sure.
Okay.
No, because it really makes you aware. Well, it makes me aware while you were explaining it, because we all know as coaches, if you have the best overview, you can make the best choices. But sure. Overview is something different than view.
Yeah.
And because viewing is literally what you're seeing, and we are thinking if you put your head up, you have the best overview.
No, that's not true.
Which is not true.
For half of the people.
Yeah. So 50% maybe is benefiting and 50% is getting worse.
Yes. So
we're pushing them into something that they preferably don't do, let's call it.
Yeah. And we are devaluating. So devalorizing people that are normally very, very good if we let them do their things naturally.
Very interesting.
So the problem is how we repeat what we learned. Because, of course, everything we say most of the time is good, but not for all of the people. That's the problem. So it's not individualized. Those things are okay, but not individualized. So I need to put my attention to what are the needs of the player, and that's more difficult, of course. But they are different from mine most of the time.
You start with knowing yourself, but the second step is knowing the players.
It's why, I if you don't know about that, it's why also Walter was mentioning right before, we try to coach the intention and not the action. Because if I coach the intention, I let the person self-organize in the action world and at the same time reach the intention. Okay, with more regularly, more economically, more efficiently, and so on. But I don't say how to do it. I just give the direction of the energy, okay? That's what we want. Okay, do it as you want, but we want that. Okay, and they will find a solution because the body is really well organized and well coordinated to create an outcome, to create a solution.
Is it the same as explicit and implicit coaching?
We could see that, but it's not exactly the same. I'm explicitly giving the intention, and which is a more global energy direction. Okay, we want the ball to move on that side. Okay, or we want the ball to move on the other side at a certain moment, maybe. So do it as you want, and we want the ball at that moment to be there. Point. We don't care how you do it, but we want the ball to be there. Okay, so it's more responsibility and at the same time more freedom for self-organizing the coordination.
Okay, I understand. It's a nuance, but there's a difference.
There's a difference, yeah. Okay. It's more. It's less prescriptive.
Yeah, implicit, explicit is maybe more towards the technique. Or you put the ball in the top corner or shoot the ball in the goal, whatever, and how you do it or how you hit the ball. But this is even bigger. This make a goal, but for example, or that's a little bit the feeling that I have with it.
It can be very explicit if I want something to happen at a certain moment. I can be very, very clear and precise with details. And at the same time, the way it is organized and done is up to the players. So I trust them. Again.
Understand. Okay. One thing I wrote down is why do volleyball coaches know this? And why don't football coaches know this?
Football coaches start to know this. A lot of football coaches know this now because we launched the last century. It's starting 1989 in Switzerland. And with my friend Ralf Hippolyte, we developed the approach.
Which is also a volleyball coach still.
He's also a volleyball coach. Right. He was a national coach of the French women team at the time, between the 80 and the 90, where my wife was playing at the same time. My future wife, because we were not married at that moment. But we met in the volleyball world. And at the same time, we applied action types in 30-something different sports, which is, individual sports or collective sports.
Was it already action typing that you developed, or was it the way that you thought?
No, action type, the name and the individualization came in 95. So the first years were going in a direction where we studied what was there, who was going in that direction. So I had the chance to meet a doctor, a French doctor, Dr. Le Bouche is a guy from Brittany, and he created the psychokinetics, which is the science of human movement. And they're good books. I don't think they are translated. That's a pity, but I think it's a very good book, very up to date, despite the fact that they are still old, already old. And it was 20, 30 years ahead of everything at that time. And he was already saying a lot of things that helped us develop the action types. And I was a national coach at that time, and I was very, very influenced by his work. And I met other people all the way up to 95 when I organized something in the States, and I met other people there. And at that point, 95, we started really to go for more profiling. More profiling. We saw the differences, of course, because in my diploma work, I studied the mental representation of athletes in the national team, in the national group. And then I studied the jump. So counter movement jump, drop jump, rebound jump, and so on and so forth, squat jump. I studied that with the juniors during a few years for another work I did using a Bosco mat at that time. We didn't have that much of technology at that time. So we had the Bosco mat with an RS-232 link with a Psion computer, a small computer, and we could have the flight time and have a different power and so on and so forth. And there people we were already witnessing.
They would jump higher.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You did that also, yeah. But at the time, the technology was very poor, but still we could really see the difference between rebounders and pushers. Okay, we didn't have the matrix to read the differences, but we had the data showing that they were not jumping the same. The strategy of jumping was not the same. The way they were using angles, getting down, getting up, all the contact time, the flight time, and so the evolution of the jump was very, very individual, indeed. And we know now that there is no two jumps that are identical, that there is no two steps that are identical. So all movements are unique. So it's why we're also connecting with Wolfgang Schüller, and then we are developing things with him. So about differential learning. So that's a way of working that is very close to the action type approach. So ideally, that was the idea. We really developed the things at that moment. And then we in 98, I found the first link when I was in Australia with the first team, so with the men's team, playing against Australia to prepare them for the Olympics. And we were invited there in Canberra, and the link was done there between the physiotherapy guys that was talking about the walking top and walking bottom, and the psychological side that was saying you have such types and such types that are more oriented to intuition or sensation, that is Jungian typology. And I made the link at that moment in 98, and I phoned Ralph and I said, okay, let's go there because it seems to be okay. And from there, we made a lot of discoveries afterwards. Consequences of that first one, in fact, like the vision, the peripheral vision, the radar sides, the horizontal vertical component, leading shoulder, the rotation hip, the mobile point and the stable point. So there are a lot of parameters that can be individualized. It's why it takes a little bit of time. And I published a book last year in French. It's going to be translated. I think next year it will be ready for English. It's 800 pages about all the system. So it's a big, big Bible, taking all the reference. And it's a pity you couldn't publish it in English right away, but it's a big job to translate
looking
that.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
It's too hard for me.
Yeah, the French version is a bit too hard for Dutch people and English.
Okay, but maybe there is some answer in why volleyball coaches know this, because there are maybe five less variables on your own team in a volleyball court, and the jump was the thing that started it all, if I hear it correctly, which is the jump, main element.
Spiking techniques, a lot of techniques we are witnessing that people that were not doing the same. So at the point we were just asking us why, and then so the curiosity pushed us forward. But volleyball, it was more like a lab for us afterwards, a lab to develop that. And of course, we helped players to play better. And at the end, we use it in a lot of different sports. And now football is quite involved in the motor preferences. So we call that also motor preferences system. And we are educating people in France at the national level. And we are also educating some football academy also. And in 2014, we worked with Arsene Wenger and Arsenal also as a starting project before we worked with the Saracens rugby team in London also. And now Arteta is coming back to us because he was captain of the team at the moment we were. He was playing there, and now he's coach, so he's calling us again to do something. He wants maybe to create a new project.
Okay. So well, I think
maybe I'll give you his credential for the next one.
Would be great. Would be great. He would be a guy that would be interesting to talk to.
For sure. He's a very interesting guy. Yeah.
Especially if you see what he's doing in, which is new, innovative in the way he approaches coaching and the things and the elements he uses, for sure.
He's definitely somebody that creates a very, very nice coaching dynamic in his team.
Yeah. And it's, well, and of course now he's, for the rest of the world, he's the best coach of England because he's on top. That's also how football works.
That's also how football works, yes. Until the next chapter.
Exactly, until he loses three times. Yeah, that's how football works. Interesting. I don't know if volleyball also works like that, but...
All top sports are working a bit like that. It's always performance, success first.
That's true.
The problem is people don't know why they succeed, and that's another problem.
That's completely true, and also that winning masks a lot, so that makes people even more unaware.
Yeah. When you're winning, the tendency is to take things towards you, but at the end, the global parameters that are creating the victory, there are so many, and almost impossible to reproduce. So, which means, enjoy when you're winning and try to understand, but at the same time, you know it's a moment where you should really be on top of the wave and ride the wave and surf and just prepare for the whole.
But it also has its good things, because if Arteta wasn't a player in 2014, he may have not have called you, because he knows something that he had at that point, and it was...
No, but at the same time, he called us, of course, but he called us through one of the guys working with, which is a French guy, and that was also touched by some of the works we did before, people that we educated, and so things are turning around and coming back like a boomerang.
Yeah.
So that's also something that we didn't see before. Now, in the last few years, we are seeing more and more things like that. But before, nobody was really interested in it. So... Nobody was talking about that.
And I think it's also because in football, especially in youth football, the last, let's say, 10 years, football is becoming more and more individualized. So coaches realize that it is more adapting to the player, to the player's needs. Every player is different. While 20 years ago, it was one guy shouting and everybody was running. Exaggerating, of course, but...
It's not far away from reality.
We all know that as well. And those coaches that were 10 years ago got introduced or were taking on that style now are the guys that are more on top and more running the show. So they are more open to other methods as well.
Yeah.
I think you are, it's a hunch, but you also have the whole context of football with you, and it perfectly fits the individualization of football.
Yeah. But another way is when people start to work with an approach like action types, the thing is there will be people that are ready to work with in a team of coaching staff or in a players. And at the same time, there will be people that are not ready for that change of paradigm. And the very important thing is to work with the people that wants and just let the others do their job normally and not try to push them on that direction. Because at the end, it will create more damages than acceleration in the system. So let the people move their way. When they are ready, they will come. And the system, I'm pretty confident the system will move in that direction. We will go in more individualization in the future because there's still a lot of potential to develop there. And not pushing people on that direction is also very intelligent. So who's ready? Okay, who's not? No problem.
Completely agree. You're not the first one to say it in this podcast either.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. You cannot push for people who do not want.
Exactly. They will move when they are.
Okay. Wouter, any last things to add? Any conclusions you took again from Bertrand?
I already shared with you. It's always a pleasure to listen to Bertrand and what he has to say about coaching. So.
Okay, if people want to know more, Bertrand, where should they go?
They can go on different sites like actiontabs.org, so org or .com. There are a few information there. And of course, they can always have contact if they need.
Well, that's great.
When they are ready.
When they are ready.
Yeah. We're not going to push people that are not.
No. No, especially not. No.
They will be ready when the robots are the referees. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Bertrand, I want to thank you very much before I ask you the last question. Every podcast gets me thinking, but I really have to had to keep up in the beginning, I have to be fair, to really get a good grip on the concept. But I think you gave a very nice masterclass or overview or insight of action typing. And if I look back at my coaching, I wish I knew a little bit more about the preference about my players, because I was maybe a little bit more of a top-down coach.
I was also at the beginning, I can assure you. So, that's also a moment we learn a lot. So, need to be ready for the change. But at the end, it's because we were like that we can also welcome the fact that doing differently is not so bad.
True. Completely agree. Okay, last question. Who should we talk to next? You are named Arteta. Well, if we can arrange that, that would be great. But
I'll try to make the connection and give you the connection. We'll see.
Okay.
If not, I can give you somebody that is also in coaching. Coaches. He's in academy in Fulham in England. He's an English guy that is an action type educated. And it may give you a different perspective. It could be nice working with the kids.
For sure. What's his name?
Ross Wilding.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can get one of those. Or both. Let's see.
Let's see.
If they're already listening, no pressure. Bertrand will call you.
Okay.
Bertrand, thank you very much, and really enjoyed it. And
thank you.
We'll keep on following you and. I know Wouter is definitely looking in more into you again tonight when he comes home.
Okay.
But thank you very much.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Inside the Coach's Room. Make sure to subscribe or rate us in your favorite podcast player, or share this episode on your social media, and we will make sure that you will get access to the best webinar that's available on our website. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I would be happy to connect.